How was your weekend?
It's all right, you know. It's nothing earth shattering.
He was an ordinary guy.
Morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Looking for an extraordinary love.
I'm Peter Lowe.
Rachel.
I brought this girl up to my place the other night.
It started with a kiss.
Really hot.
A very special kiss.
You wanted her very badly.
Yeah.
A kiss that could drive you mad.
I hate interrupted love affairs, don't you?
Yep.
It's affecting his work.
There you are!
It's a horrible, horrible job. And you have to do it.
It's ruining his appetite.
My next appointment with you is Tuesday afternoon.
I'd like to make it sooner.
It's spoiling his sleep.
Sooner.
And don't think people haven't noticed.
Am I getting through to you, Alva?
He is so eccentric.
My.
For Peter Lowe.
Oh, sooner.
That's just love.
Love.
In the big city.
Yeah! Don't laugh.
I'm a professional. I don't laugh.
I'm a vampire!
Nicolas Cage.
The tortures of the damned!
Maria Conchita Alonso.
Shoot. Do it or I'll fire you. Do you understand? Not the floor, Alva.
And Jennifer Beals.
You are so pathetic.
Vampire's Kiss.
Strange stuff. I'll never do that again. Jeez.
Welcome to They Call This a Movie, testing the strength of friendships one terrible movie at a time. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and other podcast services by searching They Call This a Movie. We are part of the Main Damie Network, and to find more from us, check out the website at themaindamie.com or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at themaindamie. We are also now a proud member of Geek Vibes Nation. You can find them at gvnation.com. Welcome back to They Call This a Movie. This is Anthony DelVecchio, and with me, as always, is Dan Aquino and Mark Myers. Say hello, gentlemen.
Yo, what's up, everybody?
A, B, C, D, E, F, G. HIJKLMNOPQRSTUVWXYZ. I never misfile anything.
Not once.
Not once.
When I was watching this movie, I kind of thought I could see Mark being this type of guy at the office. And now it's all been but confirmed.
Yeah.
And by the way, it is completely nerve-wracking to say the alphabet out loud on a podcast.
We've only been saying it for 34 years, right?
Especially, maybe it's a little things from Stranger Damies. Maybe it's knowing to have you two guys staring back at me in any tiny mistake.
You'll be grilled. 100%.
Yeah. So welcome back to They Call This a Movie. This is, once again, we are under quarantine as we join the rest of the world. So before we get into the movie this week, we kind of wanted to take a moment, a few minutes, to talk to each other about what we're watching besides the movies we're watching for this podcast. So, Dan, what's getting you through these long days with, very little to do and very nowhere to go?
I've been watching a couple of real stinkers, man, outside of these movies. Okay. So I can't seem to buck the trend here. I watched the new the Child's Play remake with Aubrey Plaza and Mark Hamill as the voice of Chucky.
Okay.
And last night I had the choice to watch Good Boys or Dark Phoenix, and I decided to watch Dark Phoenix.
You chose correctly.
No. I definitely did. Well, that one was just out of I wanted to see how bad it was, and I was definitely not disappointed in how bad it was. It's such a mess, that movie. They can't get it right. And I'm convinced that Sophie Turner has no future outside of Game of Thrones.
Okay.
That, I mean, she was very, very wooden. But that's what I've been watching. What's that?
She got that Quibi show or whatever.
Well, that's when they limit you to 10 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good then. I feel like that's the most I could take of her.
What about you, Mark? What have you been watching?
haven't been watching much outside of the movies for this. The only piece of cinematic art piece that I've watched that's not been a video game is the Boneyard match. So that tells you what I've been doing. nothing like a 40-year-old man and a 50-year-old man fighting in a graveyard.
Is he really know. That old?
The Undertaker's in his 50s. Yeah,
I thought he'd be older. 60. Yeah, I was going to say, I thought he'd be older by now.
Yeah, he's at least mid-50s because I know the last time he was in the Royal Rumble, we do a pool every year and whoever got him automatically wins oldest. And I think he was 53 during that Rumble, or 54, one or the other. But and AJ's in his 40s. So one of my favorite things, I don't know if you guys might get this and definitely anybody that watches sports out there, was that, AJ's from Georgia and it was like... So once again, a team from Georgia had someone buried and couldn't finish.
There you go. The Atlanta Braves, right? I got that one.
So Mark, you said you're playing video games. What game? Yeah. What game are you playing? Not to step on the toes of your other podcast, but
no. I've been playing. Well, outside of the ones for the streams that everybody knows out there with Stardew Valley, and I played the SNES Jungle Book game.
You tried to anyway.
I try to. That game, I am terrible at platform. And plus, that game's a little unforgiving because it's a mid-90s platformer, so you got to be good at it to be good at it. You can't fake your way through it. I've been playing some... what did I load up today? Uncharted 4 got downloaded for free, so played a little bit of that. I've been getting Shrines in Breath of the Wild. Been playing some sports games just to get my fill of sports, so NBA 2K20 and Madden 20. Going around like that, and then just playing through as many retro games through the retro arch as possible. Just kind of trying to fill my time so I don't go stir crazy. Mm-hmm. And just anticipating the game I'm getting on Friday. So that'll give me something to at least have one thing to focus on the week. So that's basically what I've been filling my time with. Outside, you guys normally gravitate towards movies. I gravitate towards video games. But I'm glad to get the little breaks to watch these movies for this podcast. I have been thinking about checking out some movies, but then, I just decided to put on the PlayStation instead.
Okay.
Nice. What about you, Ant? You watching anything good?
So I have been watching some movies. I've also been watching as kind of a background show to have on. Community just went on Netflix. So I've been kind of putting that on in the background as I do other stuff. But I caught Good Boys yesterday while you were watching Dark Phoenix.
Thank you.
You definitely did not pick the right movie.
No, I've heard good things about Good Boys.
What else have I been watching? I saw Onward because that went on Disney Plus this past weekend. Watched Perks of Being a Wallflower again. I've been doing Quarantine Days of Horror, which has been making me watch a bunch of horror movies. I've been posting reviews on the site. You can check that out at maindamey.com. I showed the wife Birds of Prey.
Did she like it?
She liked it. I mean,
she likes Suicide Squad, so.
we watched yesterday a couple weeks ago, and I've just been, kind of putting on some movies in the background that I've seen a bunch.
Is that the one where the guy writes...
About the Beatles. Yeah, the Beatles.
Is it about the Beatles or the guy that sings Beatles songs?
He wakes up and the Beatles never existed.
That one, yeah.
Yeah.
I heard the end of that movie is just laughably bad.
Yeah. I didn't mind it.
I didn't mind it.
I thought it was... There's one part that's kind of cringy towards the end, and then how they end it, it's just kind of like, eh. It was kind of a letdown.
I watched that movie with no expectations, and it was just like, oh, that was fun. That was a cute movie. But the idea that that guy would grow up next to Lily James his entire life and never, fall madly in love with her, even though she's falling in love with him, is laughable.
True. Right, especially when you're, she's with you all the time, and she's your manager, quote-unquote.
She's not only his manager, she's, literally his biggest fan.
Yeah, how do you not see that, dude?
Yeah.
That's so weird. A buddy of mine watched it the other day and said, well, why couldn't they get a better looking guy to be the main character? And I said, well, the whole point was it's this unassuming regular dude who, you know, is thrust into this weird situation, and he has this smoking hot chick who's a 10 ready to, you know, be with him.
They frumped her down a little bit, so she was like a 9.5.
Nah, even even with this, man, 10, solid 10.
Yeah, no, you can like look past maybe an 11. But she was a kindergarten teacher, so, you know, she's not making dick.
That's true. And but then, you know, it is, I always enjoy hearing Beatles covers, and I did enjoy the music in the in that movie. But again, I thought when can we just do a quick spoiler for this movie?
Sure.
I don't think anyone's going to care. When he meets John Lennon, I thought that was kind of weird. I didn't really like that part.
Yeah, somebody spoiled that in a review, and it was just like, I'm just going to tell you this because I think it's stupid. Like,
yeah, because I mean, he's a very, especially in, and I feel like we're getting off track here, but he's a in later years or recent times, I should say, he's a very polarizing figure.
Yeah.
So when, you know, years and years ago, he was thought to be, you know, this genius. Now people are like, well, he was kind of an asshole. So I don't think it was a good time in this generation to bring John Lennon back. Maybe older people were like, oh, that, you know, that's cool. This is what could have happened, but I didn't like it.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it's a decent movie.
Yeah.
But you've been watching quite a lot of films.
Yeah, I have been. Yeah, it's just usually trying to do about one a day.
So let me ask you, and then I feel like we could segue into this movie.
Sure.
Where would you rank this movie that we watched for, they call this a movie, with the movies that you have watched recently?
This week or since quarantine? Because I have a list on Letterboxd of all the movies I've watched since quarantine.
I see you looking down, so yes. I'm assuming you're looking at your Letterboxd. Let's keep it simple. Let's keep it this week.
This week, I liked Good Boys a lot. Onward was cool. But other than that, it's up there. I mean, there's some real winners. Slumber Party Massacre 2, Nightmare at Noon, Rubber.
Rubber. Oh, yeah.
Between Rubber and Vampire's Kiss is Birds of Prey, Nightmare at Noon, Slumber Party Massacre 2, From a Whisper to a Scream, the original Friday the 13th, Perks of Being a Wallflower, and Onward. So
I'll tell you right now, I think I liked Rubber better than Vampire's Kiss.
Interesting. I did not.
It's neither of them are good, but Vampire's Kiss is just it's like a masterclass in insanity.
Sure. Well, before we even get too far, we should announce, yes, we are watching Vampire's Kiss, and it's a very special episode because we've done 77 episodes before this, and we have yet to cover a Nicolas Cage movie. So this is our first Nicolas Cage movie. The patron saint of this podcast, the man from Con Air himself. Nicolas Coppola. We've never covered a movie starring Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, most film podcasts can't hold off this long.
That's true.
We've covered.
It feels wrong that we haven't done it yet, but
we've covered two John Travolta movies, covered two Malibu movies.
Yeah.
Well, that feel was like more important.
We've had a few repeat offenders on this show.
Yep. Yeah, quite a few. I think Keith David's shown up once or twice.
Have we done Van Damme twice or just once?
Just once.
Just once. Time Cop, right?
Yep.
Yep. Okay. I thought maybe we got him again.
We got Jesse Ventura's been in a couple.
We've done Schwarzenegger twice, I believe.
Running Man and...
Is it just Running Man?
I think it might just be Running Man.
Burt Reynolds.
Burt Reynolds we've done twice.
I mean, you were probably thinking of Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan we've done twice.
Yep.
Yep.
Hulk Hogan we did... Oh, yes. Okay, we did the Santa with Muscles.
Santa with Muscles.
And we did... No Holds Barred. Yes, that was the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
We've
set the bar for insanity pretty high.
Yeah, so we watched Vampire's Kiss, and this is pretty much the first time Nicolas Cage ever went nuts. But guys, where are you coming from with Vampire's Kiss?
I didn't know this movie existed. But I am glad now that it is on my radar, because there's always so many memes of Nicolas Cage, and it's hard to pinpoint which one comes from where sometimes. So there's this movie, like Anthony said prior, this is one of the most memeable movies for Nick Cage ever. And I mean, that's a big, you know, that's something to say. right? Because you got Face Off, you have Con Air, you have The Wicker Man. What else is he in that you could really, you can meme the shit out of this guy? Like Ghost Rider. Yeah, it's nuts. And then you have the one scene in this movie, and we'll get to it, that I could never understand where it came from, but it's just an entire movie of Nicolas Cage making batshit crazy faces.
Yep. Yeah. What about you, Dan? Mark.
I mean, Dan can go again if he wants. No.
I think I said quite enough.
Yeah, so I absolutely knew this movie. It was one of the, I kind of regret now watching it because I saw it once years ago. So I kind of knew some of it going in, but hadn't seen it since then. It was the final cut off because it was hard to find when I did my Nicolas Cage week for my old blog, because it wasn't on Netflix at the time, but it was one I wanted to do for that. So I'm glad we got to do it in some kind of podcast or written form. This is like, if Ann has mentioned it, I forget if he said it here in the pre-show, but this was the first time he went full Cage, as it's called, you know, yeah. Like there was no rope in his performance. And it was just, as I was thinking about, cause I laughed out loud a few times in this movie. And I don't know if I liked it because I loved Cage's performance and can forgive most of the movie, or if I, for some strange reason, actually liked the movie. But it's kind of hard to separate the two, so I don't know if I could ever come to an answer on that. And also, I have, you know, I do enjoy some vampire fiction, so those stupid little moments where that is actually in the movie made me laugh, too.
Okay. Is this better or worse than the Twilight movie?
This is better.
Okay. Well, there you go. Yeah, so I knew of this movie, and I knew that's where the memes came from, but I've never seen it before. And this, if you've seen the memes, trust me, you still haven't seen the movie. And nope. If you haven't seen the movie yet, still watch it, because there's plenty here to watch and just take in for this performance alone. It's not a great movie. It's not a good movie. But this performance is otherworldly, whether good or bad. That is up to interpretation. This is American Psycho before American Psycho was a movie. I don't know if the book was already written, but it is basically the same story except for a vampire instead of a serial killer. Yeah, he's nuts in this. Shame on the filmmakers for just unleashing an unhinged Nicolas Cage on unsuspecting New Yorkers, because there are scenes at the end of this movie where they literally went out into the street and just shot people's reactions to Nicolas Cage acting a fool.
Yeah, they shot it with a crime.
Should be a crime.
Now, is this movie coming off of, like, what was Raising Arizona or any of his? Right, because I feel like this is him coming off of some, like, big time hits, and now he's kind of given carte blanche, or maybe in his mind, he's given himself carte blanche. Like, I can do whatever I want now.
Give me a second. Previous to this movie, he's done Moonstruck. He's done Moonstruck. He's done Raising Arizona. He's done Peggy Sue Got Married. Yeah. He's done Valley Girl and Fast Times at Ridgemont High. But obviously, this is right before Wild at Heart, and a couple of years before Honeymoon in Vegas. So that's kind of where we are in that. This is before that Deadfall movie where he has that weird nose.
Yeah.
Hmm. I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah. You can look that up, too.
So this is kind of like the turning point of Nicolas Cage.
This is his.
Right?
This is right before his heyday, really.
Okay. Like, but he kind of finds his gravitas here, right? Like, I can go fucking crazy, and people will respond to it.
Yeah, I mean,
he's very busy in this era. It's like there's like 7 or 8 years where he's busy. And this is one of the movies.
Yeah, his heyday technically begins in 94. You know, you go Guarding Tess, It Could Happen to You, Trapped in Paradise, Leaving Las Vegas, The Rock, Con Air, Face Off, City of Angels, Snake Eyes, 8mm.
Look, in terms of Nicolas Cage, he really doesn't have a misstep in this whole time. From between Raising Arizona, maybe even you want to say Peggy Sue Got Married, to, man, there's just the salad days, man.
Well, we brought up how
Captain Corelli's Mandolin might have been like the one, But then, oh, but he's got Adaptation and Matchstick Men after that. And National Treasure.
National Treasure, yeah. I think that's kind of where he... And Gone in 60 Seconds. That's a good movie. I think after National Treasure, he kind
of... Yeah. He's got Lord of War right after National Treasure, which people seem to like. The Weatherman, which is not as good as The Family Man, but we have the World Trade Center, The Wicker Man, Ghost Rider, Grindhouse, he has a cameo, Next, National Treasure 2, Bangkok Dangerous, Knowing. Yeah, this is where he's fallen off. Right. So you could probably put it, maybe let's start it with The Weatherman, maybe. Let's give him Lord of War.
So you give him two solid decades of hits.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. From like 88 to 2005, man.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm definitely not making fun of him because he has always been an interesting actor and he's been in a lot of good movies. And we talked about who had the better track record between himself and Travolta. Mm-hmm. And he kind of blows Travolta out of the water.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I never knew that.
He's never the worst part of the movie he's in.
But his choices never make the character any better. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know.
Well, not in this movie.
Oh, absolutely. Before you got on, Mark and I were having this conversation, and I was saying that if you have half of Cage, he's a subdued Cage, this movie has no reason to exist.
I don't know about that.
No, he absolutely. If he's not going at 11, this movie... would never have even gotten released in limited theaters. There's no point of this movie if he's not so over the top.
But it's an interesting idea for the movie.
Is
a
it?
Man who...
I don't know.
To me it is, sure. I mean, we have so many vampire movies where the person does become a vampire, but in this one, he's just... It's all in his, you know...
I don't know. I think it's not interesting if they don't go full tilt.
It's easy to say because we can always look back and say that whenever he goes full tilt, it's fun. But in the time frame of this movie, if I'm watching this, I'm like, what the hell is wrong with this guy? Like, he's being a complete asshole for no reason.
Well, that's the character is an asshole. His interpretation of an asshole is phenomenal. If a guy's just a dick, then we wouldn't be having this podcast. We wouldn't be talking about this movie on this podcast.
And the funny part is I believe his accent is like supposed to be like taken from his father's accent, which opens a whole other bunch of questions.
Look, we could have an entire podcast just about the accent choice.
Yeah.
That's immediately the first thing that popped into my mind. Like, this is one of the worst. I would rather listen to Jack Nicholson try to pretend to do a Boston accent over Nicolas Cage trying to do a Philadelphia accent. Well, that's how bad he was.
I don't even know if he's trying to do a Philadelphia accent.
I think he's just trying to do a pompous, you know, mid-Atlantic, northeastern accent.
Yeah.
Well, he talks about how he's from Philadelphia.
But he's not trying, but the character is putting on airs. He's not trying, like this isn't Nicolas Cage's interpretation of Philadelphia accent because the guy came from Philadelphia. The guy wouldn't want you to know that he's from Philadelphia. The guy wants you to think that he's like this educated Upper West Side guy.
Yeah.
He's a yuppie.
Yeah.
I prefer Christian Bale's take on the yuppie over this. Well, I don't know why.
This is the world we live in where you can have both. Por que no los dos, sir?
I can have both.
Vampire's Kiss exists and American Psycho exists. You don't
they
have
do.
To choose.
This yeah, isn't
a Twitter. This is not a Twitter meme where you can only choose three.
Right.
This is the world we live in.
Pick your three psychos. You can only keep three.
Nope. You can have them all.
I do think it's an interesting concept for the movie where this guy who's already unhinged in life starts to believe he's a vampire. I think that's cool. I think you don't need to go, you do need to go over the top, but he goes like over the top, finds a bigger mountain and goes over the top of that.
Look here, let me propose something to you.
Sure.
Replace, so don't take timing out of this. Let's just assume character like actor in his prime replacing him with actor in his prime, doesn't matter what year it was or whatever. Replace Nicolas Cage with Greg Kinnear.
Okay.
Guy that is 50% all the time. Is this movie worth watching?
Well, that's such a good actor to pick because he is always very bland.
He's white bread.
Yes.
Place your Thai food with white bread here. Are you are you coming back for seconds?
We can, no, absolutely not. No.
Exactly.
You put
That's
Greg
what you
Kinnear,
get with Nicolas Cage.
You put you can't compare Greg Kinnear and Nicolas Cage, man. You can't.
You can. They're two adult males. There we go.
They're probably in the same age bracket, sure. But there's got to be a happy medium somewhere. Like, could you get like a Kurt Russell maybe? Because he can play kind of crazy, but at the same time he could be serious. Well, so
in the I believe in the trivia, the two people that they thought of for this was also considered was Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No, can't do that.
I think the other one was John Travolta, actually.
Well, there you go. You have the direct comparison again.
And I don't think this movie is. I don't think this movie is better without Nicolas Cage for either of those guys.
I'm a vampire. That was my attempt at an Arnold accent.
I would love to see Arnold Schwarzenegger do this movie. I wish we had. I wish this was a universe where we could have both films.
I would just want Arnold just to do the scene where he's running through the town yelling, "I'm a vampire."
Yeah.
Just in that accent.
I wish I could do a better accent and do that. But I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling it. I don't know. I don't know. I think I don't. Yeah, you're probably right in hindsight. If anyone other than Nicolas Cage does this movie, it doesn't leave an impact.
Yeah.
In terms of pop culture, I would say. But how many people really remember this movie to begin with?
I mean, it's a meme. There would be no memes of Greg Kinnear doing this.
Oh, poor Greg Kinnear.
He knows what he fucking did.
Well, listen, yeah, I mean, some people make their living going 180 miles an hour, and some guys like to do, you know, 55, 60, and you stay to the right, let people pass. You know, they're considerate drivers out there.
If there's any way to
personify Greg Kinnear is a considerate driver.
Greg Kinnear is totally the guy that's got like a slightly newer vintage car that he only takes on Sundays and drives below the speed limit.
Right. He thinks it's safer to drive 50 in a 65. Yeah, he's definitely one of those guys. But then again, you have Cage, who's fucking going in and out of traffic with no blinkers.
Yeah. He's the crotch rocket that's going in between, that's riding the lines.
Absolutely, yeah. He holds, laws hold no sway over Nicolas Cage.
And look, if I'm on the road with both of them, I'm calling Kinnear an asshole for driving too slow, and I'm calling Cage an asshole for driving like an asshole.
So I guess what we're getting at here is that they're both assholes?
Oh, yeah. Well, everybody's an asshole. Okay. I have news for you. Everybody in the world's an asshole.
Gotcha. But they just there's varying degrees of asshole.
Yes.
We should have a podcast one day where Anthony breaks down the level. There's seven layers of assholes, and yes. Anthony just kind of places certain actors into the seven layers.
Each episode is a new actor, and we go through which level they're on.
Where they would land. I like that. That would be a lot of fun.
And do you remember, did you put this on the Chell list?
I have to look that up. The Chisel score.
Chisel score, I'm sorry.
I have to look that up. This is going to take me a minute.
What is the Chisel score?
So, for anybody that does not follow the main Damie, the Chisel score was the rating that I had for Nicolas Cage Nicolas Cage's co-stars are too good looking for him was more or less what the idea was.
Okay.
So let me see.
It's almost like a Seinfeld thing, right?
Maybe. Hold on, I'm trying to find it. We could just break a hold here and then just wait for me to find it. Okay, here it is. It's Chisell. Cage has an improbably sexy leading lady scale. So we broke it down using hotness rating, movie quality, age discrepancy, average age plus or minus, role rating, caginess, based on just how cagey he was, the raw score, and the final chisel score. Yes, Jennifer Beals was in this. I wonder, I believe we have a score sheet on here. Where did she wind up? She wound up. Ooh, she wound up pretty high. She wound up fifth.
She should be high. I think she's a very attractive lady.
She wound up with a final chisel score of 33, just behind Jessica Biel, Angelina Jolie, Eva Mendes, and Amber Heard. There you go. That's pretty representative, if I do say so myself.
100, especially from a movie like this, when she's only in it for a few minutes.
And the age discrepancy, she was a year older than him. A lot of the girls ahead of him got higher scores because they were much younger.
Yep. So. Yeah, that, you know, listen, you got to get a cougar in there every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
Represent.
There you go. Yeah,
if He's I remember correctly, younger. I think Meryl Streep's last on that list, right?
Yes.
What?
No offense to her, but she had a negative 15 age discrepancy. And she was the average age of his co-stars was 31, and she had a negative 21 in that. So.
I mean, that's hard to come back from, you know.
Yep.
You're really behind the ball there.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So
I was going to say it's no question. This is Jennifer Beals is the, you know, even though we went through and found that she didn't do much in the 80s in terms of top flight A-list films, but she is someone when someone thinks of girls of the 80s, you know, she definitely becomes one of them, and it's basically based off one movie, so. I'm not surprised at all that she's on that list there, and especially that high, because she actually looked really good in this movie.
Yeah, she's gorgeous. Vampire's Kiss from 1989, directed by Robert Bierman, who hasn't really done much of what anybody would know. It was written by Joseph Minion, who wrote Martin Scorsese's After Hours. I only mention that because this could have been like a section of After Hours. Starring Nicolas Cage, Maria Conchita Alonso, second time we're covering a movie that she was in. She was in The Running Man previous to this. Jennifer Beals, Elizabeth Ashley, and Casey Lemons. Pretty small cast. Really, it's Cage. It's really Cage and Maria Conchita Alonso with some Jennifer Beals sprinkled in. It has an IMDb score of 6.0 and a Rotten Tomato score of 61%. A budget of $2 million and went on to gross $725,000. So I don't think they were looking to get their money back on this one. Seems like it's a tax write-off kind of movie. Do you guys want to get into the plot at this point?
Yeah, sure.
All right, before we do, Mark, Jesus, I'm switching your guys' names today. Dan, do you have something to plug?
Of course, I'm here to talk to, other than the Vampire's Kiss, I'm here to tell you about the top 10 with Tia. She's a good friend of the podcast. She's associated with Geek Vibes Nation, and she has her own podcast. You could catch it every week. Check out the top 10 with Tia, a weekly podcast where Tia and her crew tackle a number of entertaining topics, like the top 10 movies of the year or the top 10 worst on-screen couples. I think Nicolas Cage and Jennifer Beals would probably be on the top 10 worst. this podcast has it all, and so don't miss out on it.
Okay, great. Yes, and we're going to take just a brief moment to hear a word from a couple of friends of the podcast, so we will be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Steve.
And this is Adam.
And we're part of the Hop Nation USA podcast.
Pittsburgh's number 3 craft beer podcast.
Join us every Friday for new beer reviews.
We'll talk about the news, history, and homebrewing.
Plus, we'll sit down with the best brewers and industry personalities that'll have us.
So whether you're a casual drinker, a hazy boy hophead,
or even if you're a whale-hunting cellar hoarder,
just search Hop Nation USA on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcatcher and join the nation.
Welcome, travelers. Seems like you're looking for a story. Well, I got one for you. It involves adventure, friendship, and all sorts of...
Earl, why don't you tell him about that time I stole that big-ass melon?
Yeah, I was going for more.
Or you could tell him about the time I kicked her ass, Earl.
I wouldn't ever tell him.
Do I need to get my ref gear on?
Okay, everyone, shut up. Now come with me as I tell you a story from afar.
Hey everybody, my name's David. I'm the DM for From Afar Podcast. From Afar Podcast is all about four friends separated by distance, but brought together by adventure. Hope you all stop by and give us a listen. Thanks.
Welcome back, and this is time to get into the plot of Vampire's Kiss. we open up in New York City and on Peter Lowe, who is talking to his psychiatrist. And Peter Lowe has a very interesting accent. As I mentioned, we could spend an entire episode talking about the accent that Nicolas Cage has decided for this movie, but we're going to go past. And he's talking about some woman that he slept with and has no interest in her now that he's slept with her.
Is it just me, or did either of you who have also played the game, as soon as they did that establishing shot, went, oh, I remember that from Spider-Man.
Well, we have both myself and Dan have worked in New York City extensively, so it was probably like, oh, it's my hellscape commute.
Yeah, it was a place I don't miss going to every single day.
Yeah. So then he has the conversation with the psychiatrist, and then he goes to a bar. And he's talking up with the girl. And they get out and go to his place, and they go back to his place and they start to make out and undress, and they start going to the bed where they make out and start rubbing up on each other, pre-coitus, when all of a sudden a bat comes flying through the window. Perfect. Yes. Puppetry on this bat, by the way.
Yeah, very realistic bat. it looked like it came straight out of Bela Lugosi's Dracula.
The girl goes running out of the apartment, barely covered, while he tries to get the bat out of the apartment. And then they both run out of the apartment and hail a cab to God knows where. And then the next morning at work, we find out that Peter works as a literary agent, and he has an assistant named Alva, played by Maria Conchita Alonso, who he verbally abuses at every second of every day. He tells her that he needs to find an old contract for a client that he can't seem to find. He's checked the files, but she needs to, now it's her turn to check every single file and try and find this contract. Then, for some reason, he looks out his window at a couple kissing in the park, and then he leaves. He takes a cab home, checks the apartment for the bat, but can't seem to find it. And then he goes to his therapist, talks about the bat incident, and she talks to him about it. And then he mentions that he got turned on from the bat, and he thinks this is really weird, as well do we.
Yeah, that's a red flag for sure.
I love the step-by-step the psychiatrist tries to go through. She's like, so you were with the woman and you were aroused by the woman, and then the bat came and you were still aroused. And he's like, no, I calmed down.
Yeah.
Then I got aroused again. I don't know what this means.
So they then at work, he abuses Alva a little bit regarding the contract request again. And then he goes out at night, goes to a club or a bar, where we see John Michael Higgins in a very small role talking to some guy about Roth IRAs, and the guy has no idea what he's talking about.
Was the meme of the pointing with the cigarette in his mouth, was that scene with Alva?
I don't believe so.
That's a little later. Okay. It's a little later. Yeah.
This movie has a lot of scenes in his psychiatrist's office and him just verbally abusing and sometimes physically abusing Alva.
You should never abuse anyone, but Alva really like hot dogs it with this contract. You know what I'm saying? I feel like it shouldn't take 2 weeks to find a contract. Like, come on.
Well, as he does say, it's
just get it done.
It's a 25-year-old contract, so she has to sift through 25 years of contracts in order to find it. And it's been misfiled, possibly. It couldn't have possibly been from Peter, though. We'll get into that a little bit.
I love that. But by who? I can't possibly tell you. Why can't you?
And you call yourself a psychiatrist.
It's so good. I love, because there are people nowadays, I'm sorry, I keep stuttering. The conversation that Peter has with his psychiatrist over that is the makings of Twitter. That's essentially what Twitter is right there.
So then he goes out at night. Then he meets Rachel, played by Jennifer Beals. And they talk it up a little bit. And then he brings her back to his place. They're making out on his bed. And then she bites him on the neck. Next morning, Peter cuts himself shaving and starts making breakfast, talking to someone we never see.
Yeah. Jennifer Beals is probably the most obvious boob tape I've ever seen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was so upsetting.
I'm going to chalk that up to HD.
Yeah.
That we could see it now. And it kind of points to also his first, I guess, or next hallucination of that happening, is that it's the same scene.
Yes. Okay. I thought that's what it was, because, well, she's wearing the exact same undergarments.
Yeah, and I went to go check to see if he was wearing the same underwear, but I didn't.
Yeah, that I couldn't tell.
I think it's literally the same scene.
I was looking at him.
That's what I would guess.
I think so, too. And it's the same pose, same tape. And I was just like, God damn it. The one thing that I wanted to see in this movie, they're not showing me.
So the next morning, as I said, he cuts himself shaving and starts making breakfast, talking to someone who we've never seen. And he goes to a museum, a art museum, with the girl from the bat incident, Jackie. He says he needs to go to the bathroom and then just leaves. She calls him and tells him never to call her again. I just wanted to point out Cassie Lemons is the actress who plays Jackie, who actually wound up becoming a pretty prolific director in her time. Not to her time, it's her time right now. She directed last year. She directed Harriet, the Harriet Tubman biopic, as well as Eve's Bayou, which is a 90s Samuel L. Jackson movie, and an episode of Luke Cage. So there you go.
It comes around, right? Where Nicolas Cage changed his last name to match Luke Cage.
Yep. And Cassie Lemons directed an episode of it.
I love the fact of how if you showed anybody that's like born 2000 forward this movie, and you'd have probably explained the concept of a pay telephone.
Oh yeah.
Or you know, why didn't you just text them?
I think they just removed the last payphone in New York City. R.I.P.
I look forward to trying to explain to our children anything about Nicolas Cage, really.
Yeah, because their first experience would be G-Force with him.
He'll be kicking, I'm sure, when one of us has a kid.
I'm showing my kids Con Air. That's first I'm doing.
Well, yeah, I can't wait for the day where my kid comes home like, Dad, you know, I just saw this movie with this weird guy in it. I think his name's Nick Cage. Like, oh.
We watched Vampire's Kiss in class today.
Come here, my sweet summer child. Let me explain to you.
Let me tell you all about the wonderful Nicolas Cage.
Exactly.
Saint Nicholas, as we call him.
At that point, I'm sure he will have obtained sainthood.
His first miracle was stealing the Declaration of Independence. So he has another psychiatry session. We talked more about the bat incident, and he just shrugs it off, said he was just horny and drunk. The way, like,
this
you very rarely hear the words horny, and it
I was horny.
He reiterates it. He was like, I was horny, I was a little drunk, I had a little bit to drink, I was drunk,
but also I was horny,
and I was also horny. Like, what the hell, man? This is a creepy scene. How can I make it creepier? I'll just keep saying horny.
Yeah, right? He says horny a lot in this scene, and he drops the see you next Tuesday like three or four times. Like, oh, you're going for it, man.
Yeah. Well, again, like I said, this is just a masterclass of batshit crazy. No pun intended with the bat stuff. Yeah. Like, he is legit crazy.
Yeah. So next scene is at work, and the client that is looking for the contracts calls Peter. So Peter calls Alva in to abuse her verbally and tells her to sit and listen to him have to do a song and dance for the client, which is one of my favorite scenes because 100% reminds me of an old boss I've had.
We've all had that boss for sure. And this is Mark, I'm assuming. This is how Mark reacts.
He talks to the secretaries in his office. So the client calls and he's nothing but pleasant. Calls says there's absolutely no rush. I understand that it's an old contract. Just take your time and it'll be fine. You know, and talk to you soon, bud.
The whole time, Cage is staring dagger at Alva. Yep. It's so funny because this is what 100% what you would be doing. Like, it processes in your mind that you're overreacting and you're being a prick, but you can't let that on to your underling. So you really have to amp it up now. And he looks like he's getting his ass chewed out. Is it chewed? Chewed. His ass chewed out. And it's very believable. And like, you can see the terror on Alva's face. Like, oh my God, when this phone call is over, I'm done. This is it.
Mm-hmm. So Peter, of course, lies, says the client is absolutely pissed. And this is where he does the little point gif. Says, am I getting through to you, Alva?
This, again, we were talking about this prior to recording, but if this movie had been made now, Peter would have been fired so long ago.
Immediately.
Oh, yep. My God. Alva could have gone straight to HR for any number of these things. Like, he's creating a very hostile work environment. Yep. He's followed me into the women's restroom. Oh, okay. Peter, you're fired. Just like, it wouldn't have even been like a second thought. Gone.
No, can't be that hard to find a replacement literary agent.
Right.
In New York City.
He was. Yeah. A literary agent. I thought he was just like I thought he was an accountant.
No, he's a literary agent. So after this, he excuses Alva and then he takes the rest of the day off. And then he goes to a diner and then he freaks out and leaves for no reason because of he hasn't been waited on in like, he says 15 minutes. Then he as he leaves, he has a reaction to his bite as he goes to leave and he runs home. At the apartment, a mime couple is performing on the sidewalk for no reason.
Do we see them again?
We see them twice.
Okay.
Because he goes in and then he comes back out.
Right.
And then he calls his psychiatrist who wasn't there. And then he calls Jackie. He apologizes to Jackie and he gets her to agree to meet him at the club at 9. So she says yes, and then he's getting ready to go see Jackie and hear something, so he goes to investigate, and then Rachel appears and puts him into some sort of trance, brings him back to bed, and bites him again. This is kind of where they recycle the same shot. And then Jackie assumes she's gotten stood up and angrily leaves the bar. Next day at work, he starts screaming for Alva, and she's not answering him. She's putting her head down, trying to pretend that she doesn't hear him. So he comes out of his office, jumps on a desk, says,
There you are.
And chases her into the ladies' room.
I was in tears at that moment when he jumps on the table.
There you are. That's just standard Nick Cage, man.
It's Cage doing cagey things. She threatens to use her gun if he ever touches her again, or... he never touched her at this point, but she says she's going to use her gun if he touches her, and she's going to tell his boss. So she tells the boss, and the partners just have a good old laugh about the whole situation.
In that bathroom scene, did either of you guys notice the woman that broke the fourth wall coming by? She stares dead into the camera.
No, I didn't see that, but I did notice that there was an older woman there, and I figured she was higher up.
Yeah, as she leaves, she sort of just stares right into the camera.
I missed that.
I didn't notice that.
The partners have a good old laugh about this whole situation.
Well, what were they talking about? It was basically like they wanted, she wanted...
a raise.
A raise, that's
what
it was.
A raise after that whole situation. And they just laughed it off.
Like, was anything written about me in the bathroom?
No.
Yeah, it was the good old boys club.
It was locker room talk.
Yeah.
That's the phrase that I was thinking of, just boys club for sure.
Yeah. He does not get any sort of disciplinary action levied against him after this whole freak out. So he goes home and finds a note written on a napkin from Jackie telling him to stay out of her life. And then he has an absolute meltdown, throwing things all across his apartment and just being Cage.
Does a pretty good job of kicking a lamp.
How many breakdowns does he have in this movie?
I feel like it's like every
definitely
scene.
Keep a counter, right?
I think he said, I think I have absolute meltdown written in my notes like 6 or 7 times.
I couldn't keep count after a while. It was just, he has a few at the office. He has a bunch at the apartment. He has a couple on the street. Yeah, he's a mess. This would be, now, if this movie trying to like write think pieces about how this was a deeper movie about like the healthcare system in America and like how he needed help. Like, no, he's just a fucking weirdo.
Are you saying this is Joker?
Exactly. Yes. This is this was Joker before Joker ever jokered.
Let's see. So meanwhile, Alva takes the subway. She's still visibly shaken from the whole chase incident. She gives some change to a singer on the subway, but she keeps her bag close to her, kind of signifying to us, the audience, that she definitely has a gun in there. And meanwhile, Peter is having visions of Rachel. As next psychiatry session, he talks about how he got mad at work, and he can't understand how they can't find the contract, and the psychiatrist talks about it perhaps being misfiled. This is where we get just incredible moments, like one after the other.
Everything is alphabetical.
We get the A through Z monologue where he just says, recites the entire alphabet, and you'd think he'd stop, but nope, he goes A through Z. It kind of reminded me of when Stacy Keach just names all the five boroughs in Gotti. It's like, oh, he's not going to name all the five of them. He's not going to waste all this time in this movie. Like, oh, no, he does. I'm like, yeah. No, Nick Cage is really going to read the entire alphabet right now.
And I think it might have been in the script that he gets interrupted, because there's a couple times where I feel like the psychiatrist is trying to say a line and Cage just continues the alphabet.
All right, just says it louder.
Yeah.
And then immediately after he does the alphabet, he says, I've never misfiled anything. Not once. Not one time. And his mannerisms during that line reading is just chef's kiss, really.
Yeah. We haven't really pointed out his hair game in this movie, because his hair ranges from like perfect to like fucking crazy look.
Yeah, and at the end it becomes more pronounced too.
Yeah, it's such a good hairdo, mm-hmm. and it's like perfectly act with his mood throughout the movie. Yep. And like there's the one scene in the office. It comes out and like there's a big chunk of the hair kind of like covering his eye, and he looks like he's been on like a 3-week bender. It's mm-hmm. it's a good yeah. hair job.
It's a pretty good moment. Like, so when he goes completely off the deep end, when he's having the hallucinations of being in the psychiatrist's office, mm-hmm. it's his hair is nuts in real life, but in his vision, it's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that's bouncing what I'm in between, and it's like, holy shit, the disconnect between what he thinks is happening versus what is happening is just completely not even the same like universe.
Yeah, it's very good. I like how they use that as almost like a barometer what is going on in his psyche. He goes, his hair is perfect. He's, you know, he's kind of in control, and then he gets slowly and like crazier and crazier. The hair just starts to act on its own, man. It's got a fucking mind of its own in this movie.
Yeah. And then that's followed up by the psychiatrist trying to calm him down, and you know, he asks who could have possibly misfiled, and she says she doesn't know. And then he just ends the scene basically with, and you call yourself a psychiatrist.
Again, that was the basis of Twitter, right? Like something comes up and like, oh, well, I know this. Well, how could you possibly know this? Well, I just know this. No, you don't. And it's just this back and forth where everyone thinks they know something when they have no fucking clue. And someone tells them they have no clue. And it just goes back and forth into the void. This whole scene is him just screaming into the void.
So the next scene, he's at his office and he's wearing sunglasses inside because it's so bright. At the end of the day, he calls Alvin to his office and says he's apologized and blames his behavior on mescaline. And he seems all nice and, you know, sweet. But then he asks her why she's leaving at 5 if she hasn't found the contract yet. And then he goes into the memed staring face and he tells her how she's the lowest on the totem pole. And it's a terrible job, but she has to do it. And there's no one else going to help her because she is the lowest of the low.
Even if someone had been here one day longer than you, I would still ask you.
Yeah, sadly, there are definitely bosses out there 100% who act like that, mm-hmm. right? If you ask, for, like, oh, I need help on this. Well, like, no, well, too fucking bad. I don't like you sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's very sad, but at the same time, if that were to happen to me and my boss kept making that face, either like three things are going to happen. I'm going to laugh in his face. I'm going to punch him in the face, or I'm going to leave. I'm going to quit right then and there. Right. If someone's telling me that I'm basically a piece of shit, you got to go. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is 88. I'm sure you could find another secretary job.
Yeah.
Right. For a much better employer.
Yeah.
I think that's what she even says to her mother.
Yep. Her mom is no fucking help.
Right. It's almost like you're supposed to work for a shithead. Like, yeah. It makes you better.
Yeah.
No, you don't do that, man. No need.
So she's stuck at the office, and on his way home with groceries, Peter sees a church, and then he has a mini freak out. Then he goes to bed, and that's where Rachel has him in bed, and she's demanding that he tells her how much he loves her. So I guess they either have sex or she just feeds on him. But after, Peter watches Nosferatu and he gets some tips how to walk. The next morning, Peter getting ready, he's getting ready in his apartment and eats a cockroach. And yes, Nicolas Cage actually at least tried to eat the cockroach. They said it took three takes, but in the scene that takes place in the movie, he immediately goes off camera. I don't know how long he kept that cockroach in his mouth, but I assume that had something to do with it, why he exited stage left immediately.
Yeah,
I brought this up yesterday. Oh, go ahead, Mark.
I was going to say, I think he says in the interview where he reveals that every muscle in his body or something was telling him not to do it, but he had to do it for the scene, or I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but you know, sort of that. And that's why he did it, you know, being such a strict method actor.
Right. Yeah. And I was telling you guys yesterday that, we have a weird history of watching movies with a lot of, animal abuse in them.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong.
I think you do it on purpose, Ant.
That's true.
I think you like to really stick it to me. I'll show that fucker.
Yeah.
He's figuring it out. We gotta switch to showing people eating bacon cheeseburgers, Ant.
Yeah. he just loves cockroaches so much.
You like that, Dan?
So he goes to work again with sunglasses on, and then he finds out that Alva has called out sick. And we cut to Alva's house, so she's talking to her mother and talking about how terrible her boss is. She said she can't go back there. She gets absolutely no support from her mom. Her mom just basically tells her, stop being a baby, get dressed, get into the city, or else we're kicking you out, basically. Peter finds out where Alva lives and takes a cab all the way to Brooklyn. And he peeks in through the window and catches her doing ironing with no shirt on. And then she tells him that she was at the office until 1 a.m. and couldn't find a contract. And he says, it's fine. I could wait. I apologize. You know, I brought you soup. And she's like, I really wasn't sick. I just was afraid of you reacting poorly to me not finding the contract. He's like, it's fine. I have a cab here. Let's just go back to the office. It can wait. So in the cab, Peter's attitude completely changes.
It's a good freak out.
And he says that they're going to find the fucking contract because it has to be fucking somewhere. And he starts going a little batty. So Alva says, hey, I need to talk to my brother real quick. He works at this gas station. Do you think you could stop and let me out, talk to him? Like, yeah. So they pull over and she goes in there and she talks to her brother. And then she asks for bullets for her gun. Because I guess she knows he has some, but he says, all we have here are blanks. We keep them here just to scare off anyone that's going to try and rob us. And she's like, fine, I'll take them. So back at work, Peter threatens Alva again, saying that he shelled out $50 in cab fare to get her back to the office, so she better make it worth his time.
My favorite lines, the way he delivers it, it's pure disdain. I just shelled out $50 on this. You better find that file. Oh, he's for real.
In a slightly creep sexual predator way, that's the same as saying, I spent all this money on dinner, you better put out.
That's true.
It's the same energy. Very true.
Maybe if she fucked them, none of this would have happened.
I just shelled out for the surf and turf. I better be getting something here.
Yeah. Maybe everybody else would have been, and maybe everyone would have been better off if Alva just blew them.
I don't think so, man. I don't think so. I just unhinged to the nth degree.
I mean, I don't blame her for not, but I'm just saying.
No, I'm not one to shy away from gratuitousness, but there is no helping Senor Cage here, man. He was gone. I think he's been in trouble for a long, long, long time in this movie. So nothing other than him believing he was a vampire was going to help him in this movie.
He goes to the bathroom and has another freak out, asking himself, where am I? But his boss, who's in the stall, answers him and tells him to shut up because he's trying to take a crap.
Stop your acting lessons.
So Peter runs back to his office, tells the secretary to screen all his calls. He closes the blinds and huddles in the corner. Alva and Peter work late. Rachel gets in through the window and feeds on Peter. And then Peter starts hallucinating, starts seeing the cab driver and his wife in his office. And then Alva finds the contract. So she goes to Peter's office, shows him the contract, but he says it's too late. And he repeats that and then chases her around the office again. They wind up all the way in the basement, chases her into the basement. She pulls the gun on him and he tells her to shoot him. And so she shoots a couple of times into the ground and he's like, at me, Alva.
In the face.
So he slaps her and she kind of passes out from fear. And then he starts to kiss her and then he sees Rachel in her place. Then he tries to kill himself with the gun, but nothing happens because they're blanks. So then he tries to wake up Alva to tell her he's a vampire, and she doesn't wake up. And then he takes the crucifix off her neck. This is a moment where I believe what we're supposed to insinuate is that he rapes her here, based on following scenes.
Possibly.
But it's really not explicitly said.
Right, yeah, they never tell you 100%, but...
Yeah, or in the best case scenario, is that his mental state made him think that he did.
Right.
But still, it's terrible.
Right. So after this, he then starts running down the street screaming that he's a vampire.
My favorite scene in the movie. I'm a vampire!
Just another day in New York, am I right, guys?
Yep.
Come on.
Only in New York. Next morning, he's turned his entire apartment upside down and is now sleeping under an upturned couch as his coffin. Rachel is there, and she says he's like her now. And Alva's family at her house is having breakfast without her. Her mom says that she got home late and went right to her room. Her brother is concerned, so he goes to check on her. She doesn't answer him while he knocks on the door. Then Peter goes to a curiosity shop and buys a fake pair of Halloween vampire fangs and then crawls through a park.
That's so good.
I like how he had to settle for the $3 pair. Yeah. Like a Halloween costume. Like, yeah. Okay, I'll take these.
Yeah, and the I like the subtleness of him ripping the bag apart to get to the teeth.
You mean quote unquote subtle, right?
Yeah. Meaning like it's supposed to be like subtle in the way that the I guess the director in his, brain was trying to go, well, this is an allegory for it. This is like a drug to him having these teeth. So he would just tear the bag apart to get to those teeth.
He finds a payphone and he calls a psychiatrist to make an earlier appointment.
The teeth.
Then grabs a pigeon and runs off with it. He brings the pigeon back to his apartment and eats it, then goes to sleep and sleeps until the next night. He leaves his apartment and heads to a nightclub, walking around like Nosferatu, goes through the crowd, checking out all the women's necks. And finds a woman sitting by herself, snorting some coke, goes over and joins her, starts talking to her, sticks his hand down the front of her dress. She slaps him, and then he bites her on the neck until she dies. Then Rachel shows up and tells him he's displaying antisocial behavior, calls him pathetic, and he says he loves her. Then she leaves, tells him that he's a loser, and she leaves with some other guy. So then he then finds her again in the club, and she doesn't seem to remember him. Barely, kind of, but she seems to only place him at the bar that they met the first time. And he tries to expose her as a vampire, but her teeth are normal. And he gets kicked out of the club and then runs into the night. And
they do the one cutback that sort of leaves it a little ambiguous with her and the guy staring off at him.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like, was she really a vampire?
Right.
He
starts to mumble himself as he walks the streets and the sun rises and he freaks out again, reacts as if he's dying, runs like a maniac around the city. And Alva approaches her brother. We assume that she tells him what happened. Like I said, never explicitly says he raped her, but it's insinuated that he does. So her brother and her head towards Peter's apartment. They find him in the phone book, and that's where they're headed. Peter finds some random wood hanging out on the street, and he picks out his best steak and then accosts passersby to try and kill, forcing them to kill him. Again, these people do not really know there's a camera there. This is Nicolas Cage running amok in 1980s New York. It's a good thing he didn't get stabbed.
Yeah, they shot it with a long lens camera.
Yeah.
So
he goes to the church and accosts some parishioners. And then eventually he just moans while walking around in the street. Then Alvin and her brother arrive at Peter's apartment and wait. And Peter's just in the middle, walks right into a brick wall and then hallucinates being at his psychiatrist's office. Says he needs a change of life and that he needs real love in his life. He then imagines that his psychiatrist sets him up with another patient of hers, Sharon. And Sharon says, I like poetry, horseback riding, Vivaldi, and long weekends in the country. And Peter says, those are the exact things that I love.
Japanese.
I think my favorite part of this scene is that he's doing this all put together guy explaining himself, but he's still standing there holding the piece of wood.
Yep.
The entire time.
Right.
I just love that line.
Yeah, that's the one thing that never disappears.
I just love that line. That's the exact things that I love. Like, I can't see this dude horseback riding.
But I think the best part of this scene is when he casually brings up how he beat his secretary and murdered someone, and the psychiatrist like, oh, these things happen, Peter. Go live your life.
Deal with the cops.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
He doesn't say he beat his secretary. He says he rapes her. Raped her and murdered another girl at a club. So he may have imagined him doing it. All this is in his head. 90% of this movie is in his head. So what is real and what is not? But it seems to, based on Alva's scene with her brother, it's probably not far from the truth.
Right. I think he probably did it.
Yeah. So then he says he's going to take Sharon out for some Japanese food. And he starts walking with quote unquote Sharon, and he mentions that he's a native Philadelphian, so this entire movie makes complete sense at this point. gets about one block into walking with Sharon before he starts to get into a fight with her. Again, this woman is fictional. Even in his fantasy of the love of his life, he can't not call her a see you next Tuesday.
You always bring up, why you gotta be a vampire? Why can't you be a regular person? Oh, man. These are just, there's so much baggage here.
So he goes up into his apartment.
Nicolas Cage has a lot of layers.
Yes. It's like an onion. And having a full-on fight with her in his apartment. And Alva points out, and when he walks up to the steps, points him out to his brother, her brother. So her brother kind of walks in, breaks into the apartment building, and then to Peter's apartment. Peter goes to sleep in his coffin, and then Alva's brother pushes the couch off of him, and Peter picks up the stake and positions it at his chest and tells Alva's brother to do it, and he does it. He pushes that stake right through his chest, which I don't know if that would really happen with that. What seemed a little not sharp enough.
Yeah, it was kind of blunt. Yeah.
But for all intents and purposes,
it would take a lot longer than it showed in the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, when he pushes it, it's like instantaneous. It probably would have been a little more grotesque.
It's not getting through his rib cage. I don't know.
Yeah.
His chest plate is not getting pierced.
Yeah. He would have to have pushed it down until he broke his rib cage.
Yeah. It probably had to drop the couch on him.
Yeah.
And then Peter dies, I suppose. And then he has one last vision of Rachel, and that's the end of the movie. That is Vampire's Kiss.
Yeah,
one of the
craziest fucking movies we've ever done.
Yeah, this movie is, like you said, it's an 11, awesome. Man. I don't know if it's awesome. It's unique. It's very unique. Is it the worst movie we've watched? No. Is it the craziest? Possibly. I don't know. We've watched some pretty crazy movies now that I don't want to say for sure, but holy shit, man. This movie, it doesn't hold back.
That's a good way to put it. Does not hold back.
Yeah, this is the first full Cage movie that I can think of.
I can't wait for more.
Yeah, I'm sure plenty of material to work with, especially nowadays.
Yeah, all those movies that we mentioned in his heyday are all worthy of They Call This a Movie.
Absolutely. If we want to be nice to ourselves, absolutely.
Yeah,
I can't wait to do the Con Air episode. That's gonna be a two-hour epic.
That's a good movie.
Oh, I love that movie. Yeah, let's do a commentary on that.
I'm always up to watch Con Air.
Put the bunny back in the box.
Is there anything you guys would do to make this movie better?
I don't know, man. I mean, again, what do you take out to really make it work? You don't take Nicolas Cage out. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think you really. What could you change? What could you possibly change? Maybe get rid of the Philadelphia accent or I think that was the hardest thing to get through in this movie when he's talking in that when he's doing that accent. But
I think his attempt was to do, you know, mid-Atlantic accent, like a yuppie 1980s, you know, better than he actually is.
I don't know, man.
Putting on airs.
Some of the times when he says home, it sounds very very Pennsylvania-ish. Yeah. You don't get to go home, Alba, or Elba, whatever the heck her name is. Yeah, I think it's a little too on the nose with the geography for that accent. I think it's...
Mid-Atlantic does include Pennsylvania, so...
I think he drops the line how he's from Philadelphia and I've lived in New York for however long when he's talking to Rebecca? Sharon. I was
fake
Jesus
Sharon. Non existent yeah. Sharon.
Right. He's talking to her about how he used to live in Philadelphia, right?
Yep.
Sometimes it's decent, but it's pretty shitty. It's a pretty shitty accent.
Oh yeah.
That would be my. I would just get rid of the accent.
What about you, Mark?
I don't know. There's not much. You can't do anything. Remove any Cage stuff or do anything because the whole movie is about this man's breakdown or his turn into a vampire, whichever way you want to see it. So that stuff's got to all stay, or it's a whole different movie. I would personally probably maybe put a little more Jennifer Beals in it. You know, just a little bit more of the Rachel character and maybe be a little more ambiguous if she's a vampire or not. You know,
make it more ambiguous? Do you think it's not ambiguous?
No. I mean, sort of the only times we see her up until the end is she's just full vampire. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe have him every so often see her in the city and not get to her. Okay. You know,
well, here's a question for you, Mark. Do you think that she is an actual vampire in this movie? Or do you think he's hallucinating? Or do you think he's hallucinating?
Yeah. I don't think she's an actual vampire.
But what I meant was like one time, like he sees her getting on a bus or getting on the train, like sees her in town.
Right. And, okay.
You know, at night, you know, or something like that, or getting in a cab or, you know.
What if, Mark, you did it where sometimes he does display attributes of a vampire? Like, when he's in the bathroom, he really can't see himself. From our perspective, we can see him. But then when he looks in the mirror, he's not seeing himself. So, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's full-on delusion in his mind. But we know, like, well, we can see him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I get what you're saying. Yeah, I don't know if leaning more into like showing it that way would work. I think what he does in his imaginary thinking that the sun is hurting him. Like that one time when he goes and tries to grab the phone and acts like the sun burns him. Right. You know, that plays that a lot more. You do a lot more if you give it 10 more minutes in this movie and spend that entire 10 minutes just working on the vampire plot of the movie. You could have different ways of doing it. I just think to be honest, you could replace at least one of those scenes with the girl, the Jackie girl, and replace it with a Rachel scene, like something, you know. And
she really didn't serve much of a purpose.
Yeah. Well, I assume her purpose is that when she breaks up with him, that's when he loses his mind. Yeah. I think that's the purpose, but it doesn't earn that because the only times we've seen him is he is, you know, in the throes of passion with her and then a bat comes in. And then the next thing we see him ghosting her at an art show,
mm-hmm.
You know, so there's no it doesn't earn the fact that he would be that broken up to have a mental breakdown about it. We would need to see something maybe Rachel did outside of the vampire bite. You know, did she ignore him at some point or, you know.
Sure.
You know, something. Gotcha. But that would be a better written movie. Mm-hmm. And that's not what this is. This is just a full-on Cage performance.
Yeah, what about you, Matt? I don't know if I would change much. I think there needs to be a little more variety in kind of the scenes. I think it gets a little repetitive. It goes... psychiatrist's office, his apartment, office, like home, office, psychiatrist's office, home, office, psychiatrist. It kind of like the scene structure is a little monotonous. I wouldn't have minded kind of breaking that up a little bit. Maybe another location. Gasp. I know that sounds expensive. But there's really not much else I would change. I mean, you could probably add a little more Jennifer Beals, but I mean, because she is probably the biggest star in this besides Nicolas Cage, no doubt. But yeah, no, I'd keep most of it. It's not a great movie, but it's the movie that it is. And I don't really think they fail in making the movie that, they set out to make. So I'm here for that. Nicolas Cage is amazing in this. As awful as he is, he's also amazing at the same time. And that's the beauty of Nick Cage. That's really what you can sum up why Nicolas Cage is awesome, because he is both awful and awesome at the same time.
He's one of the few actors that actually goes almost the full spectrum of acting range. Like, he could do award-winning a performance in Leaving Las Vegas, or he could be like really terrible in Deadfall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the fake nose. Like, sure. he runs that gamut better than anyone. I mean, probably the closest is maybe Travolta, but you know. No.
There's no equal.
He's no equal, but it's like, I can't think of another actor that even has that like award-winning performance, but also some of the worst acting I've ever seen in movies.
Well, I feel like Cuba Gooding Jr. could be up there. He's been in some really good movies, and then he's just done some like awful, awful movies. There's a bunch of actors out there who have been like, their careers starts off, you know, gangbusters, and then all of a sudden they take one wrong turn and bam. Done.
Yeah, but that's the difference with Cage.
Well, he leans anytime, into it.
Yeah, anytime he does a wrong turn, it doesn't end his career.
Right. I think he's kind of done that whole what Tyrion told Jon Snow, where like you wear it as armor and no one can hurt you. Right. So he accepts that he's this like real campy, over the top actor. So when you get a shitty movie from him, well, like, oh well, what do you expect? It's Nicolas Cage. Sure. And a lot of the times Nicolas Cage is the best part of that terrible movie.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I guess that's gonna wrap it up. You guys wanna plug your shit?
Sure. At DeAquino122 on the Twitter machine, hit me up. You could also follow our Real Play D&D podcast at Stranger Damies on Twitter. And also on Instagram. Same thing at Stranger Damies. That's it. Nice and short.
Yeah. So, Stranger Damies, as mentioned, airs every Wednesday. So the episode that aired the day that was posted the day before this is the last in our downtime session. So be sure to check that out. You know, the story kicks off into the next arc after that. But we do set up a lot in this episode. So if you haven't listened already, go listen. It's on iTunes, Google Play, anywhere you get podcasts. And then also, you know, we have the Game Vault Pod that airs every other Monday. We'll have an episode this coming Monday, I believe, coming up with the quarantine. I've lost track of days and weeks. So, coming up this Monday. And, you know, we do the streams. We do one every other Monday. We do one on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, sometimes Saturday, and Sunday. Be sure to just go to Game Vault Pod on Twitter and follow us there, and the schedule will always be posted, and we'll always tell you if there's any surprise sessions coming. So be sure to check us out. We got the Instagram for Stranger Damies as well, and we got the one, I guess, technically the main Damies Instagram is the one for this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So
So this is the main Damie. They Call This a Movie. You can find us at theycallthismovie.podbean.com, and on all social media platforms we are the main Damie. It's at the main Damie. It's themaindamie.com is the main website. You can find They Call This a Movie on all podcast streaming apps by just searching They Call This a Movie. We should pop right up. You could also find us on Geek Vibes Nation. Their main website is gvnation.com, and on all social media platforms and all podcasting platforms at Geek Vibes Nation. They got some great shows. Dan had mentioned Top 10 with Tia, but they've got so many other great shows as well. We pop up there. There's a bunch of other great shows that Dan has popped up on, as well as Mark has. I actually haven't yet, but yeah, maybe someday.
You gotta get on that, dude.
I just don't have the time.
Yeah.
Who has the time these days? That'd be great if you can just kind of follow them. Follow us. Give us a review on iTunes. That would help us immensely. And again, that's that. They Called Us a Movie. And if you want to shoot us an email and you want to tell us what movie we should watch next, you could either hit us up on Twitter, we're very active there, or you could just send us an email at the maindamie@gmail.com. I'm at Aunt Delvec on Twitter. You can find me there, and that's going to wrap it up. The director of Vampire's Kiss is Robert Bierman. So for Dan Aquino and Mark Myers, this is Anthony Delvecchio telling Robert Bierman to go fuck himself.